From Washington, this is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, the UN refusing to acknowledge Russia's Crimea annexation, the search for that missing Malaysian airliner, South Sudan government and the rebels resuming their peace talks, plus cheating at a U.S. nuclear base. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman. A majority of UN member states told Moscow Thursday that they will not recognize the annexation of Crimea. We get to the story now from VOA's Margaret Bashir at the UN in New York.
In a General Assembly vote on a resolution put forward by Ukraine and nearly 50 co-sponsors, 100 member states reaffirm their support for Ukraine's unity and territorial sovereignty. They also underscored that the March 16th referendum in the Crimea region was invalid. That referendum was watched over by Russian troops and led to Crimea's annexation by Moscow last week. Ukraine's interim foreign minister, Andriy Deshitsa, told the meeting that Russia's actions violate the UN Charter.
Many still struggle to grasp the reality. It happened in Ukraine, in the very heart of Europe. It happened in the 21st century.
General Assembly resolutions are not legally binding like Security Council ones, but they do carry the moral weight of the international community. Many delegations expressed support for Ukraine, including the United States. Ambassador Samantha Power said the resolution supports the belief that borders are not mere suggestions.
We've always said that Russia had legitimate interests in Ukraine. It has been disheartening in the extreme to see Russia carry on as if Ukrainians have no legitimate interests in Crimea, when Crimea is a part of Ukraine.
The 28 nations of the European Union expressed united support for Kyiv. European Union Ambassador Thomas Meyer Harding said the bloc condemned Russia's military aggression.
The European Union urges Russia to take steps to de-escalate the crisis, immediately withdraw its forces back to their pre-crisis numbers and garrisons in line with its international commitments, avail itself of all relevant international mechanisms to find a peaceful and negotiated solution in full respect of its bilateral and multilateral commitments to respect Ukraine's sovereignty and territorial integrity.
10 countries sided with Moscow in voting no, including Syria, North Korea, and Cuba. Among the countries abstaining were China and several African and Latin American countries. Russian envoy Vitaly Churkin said the resolution was confrontational and unnecessary, and told reporters that the 58 abstentions show increasing support for Russia's position.
Even though this resolution, which we opposed, was adopted by the General Assembly, I think it's a moral victory for the Russian diplomacy, because an increasing number of countries is beginning to understand the complexity of the situation and the motives behind the actions of Crimea and the Russian Federation.
But speaking to VOA after the vote, the Ukrainian foreign minister disagreed, saying support is growing globally for his country.
The international community support is growing and becoming wider and more concrete.
He said that support includes economic sanctions that the European Union and United States have imposed on Russian individuals and former Ukrainian officials. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
And in Rome Thursday, President Obama said ensuring Ukraine is financially stable is an important way to influence Russian decision-making. Mr. Obama spoke after the International Monetary Fund pledged $18 billion in loans to Ukraine.
This significant package of support is going to help Ukraine stabilize its economy and meet the needs of the Ukrainian people over the long term, because it provides the prospect for true growth. It will require some structural reforms, but it also means that Ukraine can go on a path that countries like Poland have been able to embark on and seen incredible growth over the last several years. It's also going to reinforce democratic reforms, and it should help unlock some $27 billion in international support for Ukraine. So it's a concrete signal of how the world's united with Ukraine as it makes tough choices at an incredibly difficult time.
Also Thursday, the U.S. Congress approved another $1 billion for Ukraine. Meantime, the head of Ukraine's National Security Council, Andriy Poruby, says Russia has close to 100,000 troops along Ukraine's border in the north, the south, and the east. He said during a webcast to a Washington audience that Russian forces are in full readiness to strike. And here in Washington, a Pentagon spokesman said Thursday that Russia continues to reinforce that area, but that Russia's intent is unclear. Russian Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu said last week the soldiers are involved in springtime exercises. He assured U.S. Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel that that would not cross the border. The tensions between Russia and Ukraine have begun complicating the ongoing cleanup at the site of one of the world's worst nuclear disasters. VOA correspondent Steve Herman reporting now from Chernobyl in Ukraine.
In northern Ukraine, close to the border with Belarus, the world's largest movable structure is being built. When finished, the 250-meter-wide steel arch is to slide 200 meters to cover the sarcophagus, hastily built after the 1986 explosion to entomb Chernobyl Reactor No. 4. Our driver has made more than 500 trips to this spot, none lasting more than 15 minutes. His Geiger counter shows the limited effectiveness of the old sarcophagus, which is in danger of collapse.
This actually perimeter of nuclear power plant, clean area. So radiation doesn't go from the ground, doesn't go from soil. It goes directly through sarcophagus.
Tons of radioactive material shot into the sky when the reactor exploded. The fallout blanketed Belarus and Ukraine and what was then the Soviet Union. But the Soviet government in Moscow did not raise a public alarm. It would be scientists in Sweden who told the world something ominous had occurred. Farmer Ivan Semenyuk says if Soviet authorities had told villagers they would never be able to return home, there would have been panic and perhaps many of the 120,000 people in the area would have refused to leave.
They lied to us. They took only 20 potatoes and a kettle. I fled in my broken down car.
But Semenyuk and his wife have illegally returned home to tend to a small wheat field and raise some chickens and a pig, just 12 kilometers from the accident site. Most of a 30-square-kilometer exclusion zone remains an eerie ghost town, off limits to all but cleanup workers and some officials who may spend no more than 15 days per month inside. A top Ukrainian communist official at the time, Leonid Kravchuk, who had become independent Ukraine's first president, visited the site 2 days after the explosion.
Of course, the Ukrainian intelligentsia, Ukrainian scientists, and those who were politically savvy saw that Moscow would never tell the truth to Ukraine. They knew that Moscow always wanted to see Ukraine under its thumb.
Не говорила правди Україні. Вони бачили, що Москва завжди хотіла бачити Україну під собою.
28 years later, those initial Ukrainian suspicions are full-fledged animosities following Russia's annexation of Crimea. Ukrainian officials say Russia has abandoned its G8 duties to lead fundraising for the sarcophagus cost overruns, totaling hundreds of millions of dollars. Ukrainian lawmaker Valery Kalchenko.
Now they will leave us on our own to finish the construction of the new sarcophagus, and it is hugely uncertain whether they will provide the portion of the funds that they took responsibility for.
There are warnings time is running out to avert a second Chernobyl catastrophe due to the precarious condition of the sarcophagus.
This is why it is very important for us today not to lose time. Perhaps we have 3 to 4 years left to finish the construction.
But even when the new protective arch is slid into place, the dangerous work will not be finished. Removing spent fuel and other highly radioactive materials will take decades and cost many more billions of dollars, a tremendous financial burden for Ukraine. Steve Herman, VOA News, Chernobyl.
You can keep up to date on what's happening in Ukraine plus the international response by going to our website, and you can find us at voanews.com.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
Australian authorities say the search for the missing Malaysian jetliner has shifted over 1,000 kilometers northeast following the emergence of a new credible lead. The Australian Maritime Safety Authority says international investigators have determined the plane was traveling faster and expending fuel quicker than previously estimated, reducing the possible distance it flew. In a statement on Friday, the AMSA said the new search area is about 319,000 kilometers. It is 1,850 kilometers west of the southwestern Australian city of Perth. The extremely remote search location, along with bad weather, have hampered the search for Malaysian Airlines Flight 370, which disappeared March 8th. It had 239 people aboard. On Thursday, it was announced that a Thai satellite is said to have spotted about 300 objects, ranging in size from small to quite large, in the southern Indian Ocean. Anand Sphigmong is executive director of Geoinformatics and Space Technology in Thailand.
We found the floating objects of various sizes, from 2 meters up to 15 or 16 meters. We preliminarily estimated that there may be at least 300 pieces of those objects scattered in the area of about almost 500 square kilometers of the image that we took.
And in China on Thursday, the Malaysian commander heading the search operation told Chinese relatives that locating the black box is now the main priority of the search. Lieutenant General Akbal Abdul Samad spoke about a special vessel on its way to the narrowed search location.
We are rushing the ship that is able to locate this ping coming from the black box. That is our main priority now, apart from the search that has been raised just now, to have that ship on location to start searching.
Families of the missing passengers once again criticized the recovery operation. Steve Wong, whose 57-year-old mother is among the missing passengers, said they have no answers now, just like in the beginning. He said no one has any new answers. Sarah Week's brother, Paul, is among the missing.
We want to say just how appalled we are with the way this whole thing has been handled. It's just been a nightmare. And that's not just for us, that's for all of the families. They all have to go through the same thing. They show their grief in a different way. And I think the handling has been very insensitive to people's grief.
Late Thursday, a candlelight vigil was held in Kuala Lumpur for those who were on Malaysian Airlines Flight 370. Also in the news, President Obama in Saudi Arabia today at the end of a week-long trip. High on the agenda are Syria, the turmoil in the region, and the faltering Middle East peace talks. We get more now from VOA's Scott Bobb.
President Obama's visit to Saudi Arabia comes amid growing strains in relations with the United States and rifts among Middle Eastern nations due to the widening conflict in Syria. A U.S. diplomat based in Saudi Arabia said the trip was aimed at advancing what was termed a range of common security-related interests, including the situation in Iran and Syria, talks between Israel and the Palestinians, and the effort to counter violent extremism. The Saudi-based Al Arabiya Network said results of the Obama-Abdallah talks could boost stability and prosperity throughout the region. The three-year conflict in Syria has heightened sectarian tensions throughout the Middle East, and the turmoil in Egypt has strained relations in the Arab world. Following a summit of the Arab League in Kuwait Wednesday, Kuwaiti Foreign Minister Sabah al-Khalid al-Sabah said Arab nations are still trying to resolve differences between backers and opponents of Islamist movements in the region. As for reconciliation, he says, Arab leaders have discussed the challenges, responsibilities, and aspirations of Arab nations for common ground to solve the problem. Mr. Obama's trip to the Saudi kingdom comes amid U.S. diplomatic efforts to sustain the faltering Middle East peace talks. These talks, aimed at reviving direct negotiations between the two parties, are due to expire in April, but have faltered in recent months. Israel is due to release a fourth and final group of 26 Palestinian prisoners in the coming days as part of the deal that revived the talks. But the release is coming under sharp criticism from hardline politicians and some family members of victims of attacks carried out by the imprisoned Palestinians. Palestinian negotiators say if the prisoners are not released, they will not continue the talks. Secretary of State John Kerry, who has been mediating the talks for the past 8 months, met in Amman Wednesday with Palestinian leader Mahmoud Abbas and Jordan's King Abdullah. The Jordanian monarch afterward reiterated the Arab position. He says, we insist that establishing a Palestinian state with full sovereignty based on the two-state solution, international resolutions, and the Arab peace initiatives is the foundation for ending the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Earlier this month, Mr. Obama met separately in Washington with Mr. Abbas and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in an effort to move the talks forward. However, both visitors returned home showing little indication of compromise. Scott Bobb, VOA News, Jerusalem.
Representatives of South Sudan's warring factions met face-to-face on Thursday discussing the next round of peace talks. As Marta Vanderwolf reports, the negotiations in Addis Ababa have moved along slowly while forces for the two sides continue to battle in South Sudan.
After a week of delay, South Sudan government and rebel delegations began direct talks about the agenda for the peace negotiations. The delay grew out of a dispute over whether seven former leaders of the ruling SPLM party, who were arrested shortly after fighting broke out in December, could take part in the talks. South Sudan Information Minister Michael McQuay says there is no reason for the former detainees to participate as a third party.
They say that they are members of the SPLM and that they are in conflict with the SPLM. What we are negotiating here, we are negotiating with people who are in conflict with the government, not the party. So the mechanism is that if they want their issues resolved, this is an inter-party issue and it can be resolved through party mechanisms.
Another reason for the delay was Uganda wanted to send observers to the negotiations, but the rebels have refused to allow this as long as Ugandan troops are in the country assisting the government. Rebel delegation spokesman Johannes Spook says he is not too confident about the talks.
Since the other party is not always serious about coming to the comprehensive solution to this crisis, so I cannot assure you what will be the outcome.
The items expected to top the agenda are implementation of the ceasefire deal signed in January and the issue of humanitarian access to people affected by the conflict. The fighting between troops loyal to President Salva Kiir and soldiers who back former Vice President Riek Machar has left thousands dead and nearly a million displaced from their homes. Peace talks mediated by the East African bloc IGAD started shortly after the start of the conflict but appear to be making little progress. The ceasefire agreement has been repeatedly violated by troops on both sides. Marta van der Wolf for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta has pledged to address insecurity in his country by boosting police forces and committing to operations in neighboring Somalia following recent terrorist attacks and threats. In a State of the Nation address on Thursday, the president also vowed to fight corruption and waste within the government. VOA's Gabe Joslow has more from Nairobi.
Speaking at a special session of parliament, President Uhuru Kenyatta underscored his administration's focus on combating terrorism by recalling the attack on Nairobi's Westgate shopping mall in September by the Somali militant group Al-Shabaab.
As we learned last year, insecurity anywhere in our region is a promise of insecurity everywhere. If we do not help our neighbors to achieve the peace, freedom, and prosperity they deserve, then our own freedom and prosperity is threatened.
Kenyan troops have been involved in operations against Al-Shabaab in Somalia as part of the African Union peacekeeping force, AMISOM. Al-Shabaab has vowed to continue to carry out attacks in Kenya in retaliation. Mr. Kenyatta also said he would increase the number of police to address insecurity within the country. In his first State of the Nation address since taking office last year, President Kenyatta also acknowledged the need to clean up government.
It is a hard truth that some of our public services are rife with waste and corruption. That waste threatens the productivity we have so painfully begun to build.
To reduce government expenditures, Mr. Kenyatta said his cabinet had agreed to take a 10% pay cut, while he and the deputy president will take a 20% cut. Kenyans have voiced frustration with the comparatively high salaries paid to public servants in a country with a 40% unemployment rate. The president made no mention of the charges he faces at the International Criminal Court. The court has accused both him and Deputy President William Ruto of organizing deadly ethnic violence after the 2007 presidential election. Ruto's trial began last year. The president's trial has been delayed as prosecutors attempt to collect more evidence. Gabe Joslow, VOA News, Nairobi.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's premier newsmaker interview program. If you have ideas for guests or topics, or want to comment on one of our programs, please write to us at Press Conference USA, Voice of America, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. That's Press Conference USA, Voice of America, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. Or if you have access to the internet, send us an email to pcusa@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is pcusa@voanews.com. We look forward to hearing from you.
Nine top officers at one of the premier nuclear missile bases in the U.S. being stripped of their duties while another has resigned, all of this result of a cheating scandal. VOA's Jeff Selden has more from the Pentagon.
Following its investigation, the Air Force came down hard on senior leaders at Malmstrom Air Force Base in Montana, even though none was directly tied to the scandal. Air Force Secretary Deborah Lee James.
Nine officers in leadership positions at Malmstrom were recommended for removal. One officer submitted his resignation and will retire.
The fired officers include the commanders of three missile squadrons, each responsible for 50 nuclear missiles. The commander of the 341st Missile Wing at Malmstrom, Colonel Robert Stanley, is the officer stepping down. The head of the Air Force's Global Strike Command, Lieutenant General Stephen Wilson, says they bear responsibility for an environment that allowed cheating to flourish.
There's been an unhealthy overemphasis on perfection and a marked fear of failure, which kept airmen from identifying their weaknesses and working to correct them.
Military investigators blame the scandal on a group of lower-level officers gone bad, three of them implicated in an illegal drug investigation that first uncovered evidence of the cheating. Wilson says the subsequent investigation showed as many as 100 lower-grade officers involved, either actively cheating on the training tests or having knowledge of the cheating and not speaking up.
These were all bright officers, and as we've said before, none of these needed the information to pass the test. They felt compelled to cheat to get a perfect score.
As many as 40 officers will be eligible to return to duty. The others could face a range of penalties, including court-martial. U.S. military officials insist, despite systemic problems of low morale and micromanagement at all of the country's missile bases, their investigation failed to turn up evidence of cheating outside of Malmstrom. Jeff Selden, VOA News, the Pentagon.
Concluding on a sad note, former U.S. cabinet member James R. Schlesinger has died. He was 85 from complications of pneumonia. Mr. Schlesinger, appointed director of the CIA in 1973 by former President Richard Nixon, then named defense secretary a few months later, serving until 1975, later put in charge of the newly formed Department of Energy in 1979 by former President Jimmy Carter. Many thanks, everyone, for joining us here on the Voice of America for International Edition. A reminder, the top world news is coming up shortly. For our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, Daryl Smith, I'm Steve Norman in Washington. Have a great Friday. This is Today in History. On March 28, 1834, the U.S. Senate approved the first and only censure, a largely symbolic reprimand of a president of the United States. President Andrew Jackson had ordered federal funds to be withdrawn from the Second Bank of the United States, which Congress had rechartered over his objection. In 1854, France and Britain declared war on Russia, entering the Crimean War. Russia lost the war to an alliance of France, Britain, the Ottoman Empire, and Sardinia. They entered the conflict fearing increasing Russian power and an upset to the balance of power in Europe. In 1939, the three-year Spanish Civil War effectively ended when nationalist forces led by General Francisco Franco marched into the capital, Madrid. Some 600,000 people are believed to have been killed in the conflict between loyalist Republicans and right-wing nationalists. In 1964, pirate radio station Radio Caroline began broadcasting pop music to Britain and other parts of Europe. It circumvented record company control of pop music and the BBC's monopoly in programming. Caroline quickly gained millions of listeners. In 1969, military commander and 34th president of the United States, Dwight David Eisenhower, died at the age of 78. Eisenhower served as supreme commander of Allied forces in Europe during World War II. On this date in 1979, America's worst commercial nuclear reactor accident occurred at the Three Mile Island Power Station near Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. While no one was seriously injured, the accident eroded public confidence in nuclear energy. I'm Dave DeForest with VOA's Today in History.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States, Canada, France, Germany, Italy, Japan, the United Kingdom, and the presidents of the European Council and European Commission reaffirm their support for Ukraine's sovereignty, territorial integrity, and independence. In their Hague Declaration, these countries strongly condemned the illegal military actions and annexation of Crimea by Russia. Russia's actions, the declaration affirmed, will have significant consequences. In addition to the sanctions already imposed, the U.S. and its allies remain ready to implement additional sanctions that would have a significant impact on the Russian economy. Russia can choose to avoid these consequences, but it must take actions now. Russia must respect Ukraine's territorial integrity and sovereignty, begin discussions with the government of Ukraine, and accept offers of international mediation and monitoring to address legitimate concerns. The leaders of the G7, the United States, Canada, France, Germany, Italy, and Japan, announced that they will not participate in the planned G8 summit in Sochi, Russia. We will suspend our participation in the G8 until Russia changes course and the environment comes back to where the G8 is able to have a meaningful discussion, and will meet again in G7 format at the same time as planned in June 2014 in Brussels. G7 members will also meet to discuss ways to strengthen their collective energy security. Mindful of Ukraine's economic situation, the G7 strongly supports the International Monetary Fund's efforts to lessen the country's economic vulnerabilities and better integrate the country as a market economy in a multilateral system. The G7 strongly supports the Ukrainian government's ambitious political reform agenda that includes constitutional reform, free and fair presidential elections in May, promotion of human rights, and respect of national minorities. The United States and its allies remain firm in their support for the people of Ukraine, who seek to restore unity, democracy, political stability, and economic prosperity to their country.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.